It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. And if this is your first time listening or you just recently started listening to us, thank you so much for putting us in your ears. You can get in touch with us all the usual ways on email, thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com or on social at IT Women's Podcast. Today, we are talking to two brilliant young Black and Irish women. They are carving out paths in medicine and law, and we talk to them about the barriers they have faced and overcome. Agogo Opara is a Nigerian-Irish medical student at UCD. She holds the title of Gold Medal Winner for Research Excellence 2023 at UCD's School of Medicine. She placed first out of 133 medical students. She has been named Face of the Future by the Irish Times and a trailblazer in Black Irish history by RTE. Agogo is also a content creator with an audience of 250,000 plus across her social media platforms, where she advocates for health equity and access to education for children from underserved communities. Ini Ekiolu is a Nigerian-Irish law graduate, currently a paralegal at Deloitte Ireland, and she's about to start as a trainee solicitor. She's passionate about access to education, giving multiple keynote addresses at corporate and university award events. Ini is also an emerging content creator, speaking on diversity in law and sharing advice to support the entry of ethnic minorities into the legal industry. Ini, you might remember, has been on the podcast before, speaking on a number of different subjects, from men's violence against women to our live event, Older and Bolder. In this episode, we're going to hear from these two young Black Irish women who have excelled in their respective fields of law and medicine, despite plenty of obstacles along the way. Their achievements are the result of perseverance, dedication, confidence, talent, and of course, a lot of hard work. They have had none of the privileges enjoyed by many of their classmates, whether family connections in the industry or expensive educations, and they talk about this really eloquently. We had a wide-ranging and, I hope you agree, fascinating conversation, which we hope will be hugely encouraging to other young women who may have been told that certain career paths are not accessible to them. We talked in the conversation about imposter syndrome, about dodgy school guidance advice, which I think we've all had, and about how the Dublin riots affected them. I began by asking these bright young women to introduce themselves, starting with Ini.
My name is Ini Ekiolu. I'm a current paralegal at Deloitte Ireland and a future trainee solicitor at Arthur Cox. So I've been studying for my FE1 exams. I have the majority of them finished now, and I will be commencing my training contract in 2024.
Excellent. And you live currently in Dundalk, but you'll be moving to Dublin.
Yes, we'll be moving to Dublin. Really excited for the move. Want to be in the city centre where everything's happening. So really excited to get up here.
Agogo, tell us your little potted history.
Yes. Hi, everyone. So my name is Agogo Opara. I am a second year graduate entry medical student at UCD. I'm also a content creator, so I create content on TikTok and Instagram, have a combined following of around 250,000.
Very impressive.
Thank you so much. Very unexpected even how that growth happened, but I love creating, so it makes me happy. It's kind of like what I do on the side to college. And I'm also a writer, so I have a blog. I love expressing myself in different ways. And yeah, that's kind of me.
Why you're both very interesting is that you occupy this space, because you've talked about it, I think, and written about it as well, about
yes.
being Black and Irish, mm-hmm. Having that Irish identity, but having that very visual, different identity that people, you know, are commenting on all the time and saying. So can you talk a little bit about that for us and how you merge the two and what other people's reactions are to that?
Yeah.
Because it's a constant thing that you have to deal with.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, and like I've written about it before on my blog, It's a complex identity of having to, you know, battle with where you were born versus how you were raised versus where you grew up. Do you know what I mean? It's like living between two cultures all the time. At home, I have a particular culture. As soon as I step outside my house, there's another culture. There's different expectations on both sides. Do you know what I mean? Like, for example, in Ireland, sports would be a huge thing, like Gaelic football and stuff. And when I was a kid, I would be playing GAA. And all of that was good. But then at home, it's like that wasn't a thing. Do you know what I mean? At home, we have very different interests. And I think, like, being a kid, all you want is to fit in and belong. And when you don't know what to fit into and there's two opposing stories, it's really hard to navigate that, you know? So I feel like I've literally spent most of my life trying to come to that place of acceptance that, look, you don't have to perfectly fit into a box. You can create a space for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been trying to become more and more comfortable in as I grow older, that, okay, I do have this dual identity. It's very new because, like, you know, being a Black Irish is a very new identity. It's not like there's a blueprint to work from. And I think that's exciting, you know, because it's like, cool, I get to create what that means for myself. And I don't have to look to other people and be like, this is the standard I have to meet or the expectation I have to meet. So I've been trying to find the more positive side.
Yeah, I like the positivity. But obviously, it's challenging too, Innie, to move through these two cultures, two identities. Yeah. And probably a lot of the challenge is other people's perceptions. Because I think, you know, I feel like people judge people a lot based on, you know, what their assumptions they make about people, which is absolutely ridiculous, whether people are Black or white. You know, you just don't know what's going on with other people. So it's a silly thing to do anyway. But presumably, that's something that happens a lot with you.
Yeah, I think, like, it's really lovely what Gaga was saying, because it's really interesting. I think whenever I just go about my daily life, like, I identify as, like, Nigerian Irish, and, you know, you're here all the time, so everything is grand. But when someone comes up to you and they're like, oh, where are you from? And I'm thinking, where am I from? Where am I from? So that question is kind of difficult to navigate, because there's already things like, where was I born? Where am I living? Like, which nationality do I choose? So, you know, you say something like, from Dundalk, and they're not accepting that answer, because it's not really palatable to them. So they're asking, oh, where are your parents from? And then, you know, you have to go in. So it's, I feel like when simple things like that pop up, it's kind of a reminder of, you know, my heritage and everything. Of course, obviously, the everyday, but it's such a simple question with such a difficult answer or a complex answer.
Yeah, we've had a few articles in the Irish Times about that question, where are you from? And I've sort of stopped asking that question. I was someone who would have asked that question of people, and then just finding different ways to talk to people, because obviously I think people are interested in heritage and interested in people's backgrounds. And in a lot of ways, it can be kind of an innocuous question. It doesn't have to always be a loaded question, but it also has layers. Yeah. So it's just navigating that, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, like, naturally, it's a natural question, funnily enough. Like, I think it becomes confusing when you're on the end of it. That's like, wait, what do they mean? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you mean where do I live?
Yeah.
Do you mean what country my ethnicity is?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like, that's where it can be difficult to navigate. Because I would agree, I love learning about different cultures. I love meeting somebody who, like, I can tell by their accent that maybe they've just emigrated to Ireland.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I want to learn about where you've come from. But it's like, it's just this confusing space when, I suppose, you've lived here all your life, and sometimes you're met with that response of, after you say, oh, I'm like, I can say I'm from Dublin, and they're like, no, like, where are you really from? Versus some people genuinely just want to know, are you from Dublin or are you from Dundalk?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know? And it's like, how do you tell the difference?
You don't know.
It's
so
tough.
That's why it's like that kind of difficult. What do they mean? I don't know which one that they're
and it's
looking
for. So if you say you're from Dublin and you say you're from Dublin, I mean, it's accepting that answer rather than kind of going, no, you don't understand. You're not really from Dublin or Dundalk, you know, and I'm going to now tell you why that's not the right answer.
Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? Let's go back to sort of growing up. You were saying you're here since you were three. So, you know what I mean? Irish, like you're here all that time. But growing up, did you have any clashes or moments where you were othered and felt and made to feel like that? Because you've written quite well about that, as you said, in your blog.
Yes, thank you. I definitely have. So I was actually just with a friend yesterday who I went to primary school with. And so I went to two primary schools when I moved to Ireland. The first one I went by my first name, which is Agogo. And I remember maybe because like kids are just kids. Kids are innocent. And people would make fun of my names because back then, you know what we call a bobbin now, we would call a go-go. So people would be like, a go-go. And they'd be like
a bobbin for your hair was called a go-go.
Literally. Okay. So they'd be like dangling a bobbin. I'd be like, a go-go, a go-go. And it's funny and all of this, but I felt like as a kid, like when you are feeling the difference between you and others so prominently through your skin color, and now people are making you feel it even more, it was really, really difficult for me because all you want to do is belong when you're a child. You don't care about anything else but feeling like you fit in. And so I remember when I moved to my second primary school, when we moved away from that town I was in, and I started like halfway through the term. So in like January, I remember right before going into the classroom, like junior infants classroom, begging my mom, do not tell them my name. Let's go by my middle name, Sophie. Like I vividly remember it like it was yesterday. I was like, please don't tell them my name, because all I wanted was to feel normal and to feel accepted. And I think after that, I really went through a lot of like an identity crisis, because all I wanted to do was to assimilate and to feel accepted. So I was giving up a lot of parts of myself, rejecting a lot of parts of my culture, of my identity, for the sake of wanting to fit in and wanting to feel like I belonged. And it's taken me a lot of years actually to break out of that. Like even going by my name, Agogo, I didn't actually start going by it again until I was maybe like 18 years old. And even then, it was like when I'd introduce myself to people, I'd say, hi, I'm Sophie, because that would be the easier thing. Because I'd be like, if I tell them my name is Agogo, it's going to become a conversation in itself. So let's just go by what's easier. Till I got to the point where it's like, why constantly reject yourself just for the sake of other people's comfort when you know yourself, you're not comfortable? So I don't know. It's been an interesting journey, because I think obviously how you grow up forms a lot of who you end up being as an adult. Like, I don't know if you've had any experiences like that, any?
Definitely. And I think I resonate deeply with the whole having to assimilate. And it's kind of, it comes from self-preservation, you know. That's how you're able to thrive in environments like this. I vividly remember myself just on the point of how kind of your childhood and your growing up really does affect how you go into adulthood. I was in going into secondary school, and I was in first year. I was actually really excited to go into secondary school. And I was a pretty good student, you know. I would listen to the teacher and everything like that. So I got called into the principal's office one day. I was like, goodness, over the intercom, everyone's like, ooh, what did you do? Got called into the principal's office, and she's giving out to me, and she says, the teachers are saying that you're talking too much, and the teachers are saying that you're not listening, all these things. I was staring to see, I was crying, I was so upset. And then she went to my grades, and she goes, wait, I mixed you up. It's not you. It's someone else. Because
someone else has black.
Someone else does black. Someone else that had a similar name to mine, but obviously completely different last names. So she had like, you know, completely slated me. And then when she realized it was the wrong person, she was like apologetic a bit, and then, you know, sent me back to class. And it was just that kind of experience. And then going throughout secondary school of being one and the same, and just, oh, everyone is the same, everyone kind of looks the same, all of like the black students, and always like mixing up our names and not seeing us as different identities, as different people. And I think from that, it really stuck out to me that I need to stand out. I need to show them that I'm Innie, and this is who I am. And, you know, like I got into public speaking, I got into student council, like prefect, all these sort of things, because I want them to know that Innie is Innie, and this is what she does, and you can't confuse her with anyone else. And I feel like it's continued till this day.
But you bring up something really interesting, I think, because what I'm hearing from you, because of that experience, and I'm sure other experiences, there was a sense in you that you were going to have to work twice, three times as hard as other people in order to not have stuff like that happen to you, that you're going to have to stand out, which is quite a burden in a way. I mean, great, because both of you are obviously so high achieving. You've managed to get this far in exactly what you want to do. But Agogo, what do you think about that? Does that resonate, that you've had to work harder?
Yes, I definitely think so, especially like even just thinking of background, for example, like, okay, so I'm in medicine, and in medicine, a lot of people are coming from extremely privileged backgrounds. And a lot of, like, I think people forget the amount of influence, your background, and even like your parents, your connections, all that has in who you become.
All that social capital that people build up.
Exactly. Yes. Like over the years, whereas you're coming from a place where you don't have anything. Like I'm basically the first doctor in my family, or I will be the first in my family. And I just, like, I know when I was preparing for the HPAT, so I have a very complex journey to medicine. It took me a few years to actually get in. But when I was in secondary school, you know, preparing for the HPAT, preparing for medical admission exams, I didn't have anybody to ask questions to. Even like this, I didn't go to a fancy school, so they didn't have many students that would have applied to medicine, and therefore they didn't really know how to help me. So my school couldn't help me. Mm-hmm. At home, I couldn't be helped. I was probably like 15 at the time trying to figure out how do I get my head straight here, because I wasn't only applying to, you know, Irish medical schools. I was also applying to UK medical schools. And for them, I basically had to submit my application at 16, mm-hmm. meaning I had to have everything in order at the age of like 15 years old.
And it was yourself, essentially.
By myself. Yeah. Exactly. And so I had to really push myself to like work hard, do as much as I could that was in my power. And you can't expect a child to know how much, like how much they can do or how much they can accomplish all by themselves without any external help. And I don't know, I think like looking back now, I understand why I've had such a challenging journey, because it's like you didn't have the resources like handed down to you, if you get me. But going back to your point about like having to work extra hard, I think it's a very interesting topic. I've heard people argue this, even this whole thing of Black excellence, this concept of we only celebrate Black people when they're excellent, yeah. versus, you know, like it's okay to be mediocre. It's okay to be average.
Yeah, it's the same as with women as well. You know, it's okay to be an average, you know, woman too.
Exactly.
We celebrating these people who reach the highest echelons. Why can't you just be ordinary?
Why can't you just be ordinary? Yeah. Exactly. And it's just so strange.
Not that you two are obviously going to be ordinary. The rest of us, you know. But go on.
I think it's so strange that like, yeah, you have to really, really fight to just almost prove that you are worthy to be in a space. And like you said earlier, we should be seen as worthy just being the individuals that we are. Like our worth should not be tied up in how hardworking we are or how much we're able to offer to a table. Of course, hard work should be rewarded and all of these things should be celebrated, but people should also be embraced for just the core of who they are. And I think that's something that tends to be overlooked a lot when it comes to being of minority in terms of race, gender, etc.
Class, all of those things.
Exactly.
Because I think class is an issue, what you're describing, as well as ethnicity, because, you know, the fact that you went to that school where they weren't used to perhaps medical students and that you had to do it yourself. Innie, does any of that sort of, I feel like everything that Agogo has said is resonating with you.
Yeah, I think when it came to us saying this to Agogo today, class became visible to me when I went to go study law. So I enjoyed my childhood, happy girl, but I didn't realize that I was coming from a disadvantaged socioeconomic background.
There's a funny thing in Derry Girls. I don't know if you watch Derry Girls, but there's one scene where one of them goes to the other, I think we might be poor. And the other one's like, I think we're poor as well. And it's like that realization, because especially if you've had a happy childhood.
Exactly.
Like I grew up in quite a poor household, but I thought it was fine. And then you go to other people's houses and you'd be like, oh, and then people are going off on foreign holidays. You're like, oh, right, that's how other people live. Go on anyway. Entering the world of law, did it become very acute?
Yes, it did in many, many different ways. But in my second year, I realized that, you know, I want to qualify. I want to be solicitor. I want to do the whole thing. And I had another friend of a friend who was also in law, who was another Black student. And he told it to me straight. He said, if you're not from UCD Trinity, if you don't have rich parents, if your family is not in law, if you don't have connections, you will not make it. And I remember being at the table crying because I just wanted it so bad. And then he's telling me that you need to go above and beyond. And then I realized the importance of connections. I said, okay, if it's a connections game, I'll make my own connections.
I'll make my own.
I just said, let's go. So I started doing everything. I did everything. I did a lot of extracurriculars. I got involved. I did a lot of public speaking. And I met so many amazing people. Amazing, amazing people who taught me so much, who led the way. And I think it kind of accumulated bit by bit by bit, because when people see me now, they're like, how'd you get there? But it really was years of just doing something, getting involved, putting myself forward, and whenever I had the time, whenever I was able to volunteer. And it's great, but at the same time, it's like, why should you have to? It's kind of like a full-time job on top of studying full-time, on top of commuting, on top of whatever caring responsibilities you might have at home. There's a lot of aspects there that play in mind, but it's, law is an interesting one. It's a very tough to navigate industry, and it is a bit taxing, but I do think that the rewards are worth it. I don't regret anything. Mm. I completely love the decision that I made to pursue law. And I think even with this episode, what I want to like let people know, and anyone who is in like primary school, secondary school, college, whatever it is, if you're from an ethnic minority and you think that it's not attainable to you, me and Agogo are literal representations that it is.
And you're not the only ones, right?
We're not the only ones. Yeah, we're not the only ones at all. And I think finding mentors in Ireland who had a similar background as me were just great inspirations that I clung on to.
Yeah.
I clung on to them so hard. I was able to go to them for even empathetic support as well as professional support. And they were able to offer so much proper valuable advice that they didn't have. And it's just paying it forward.
And going back to what Agogo was saying, like in both your fields, I imagine sort of you can witness nepotism. You see people whose fathers, grandfathers were doctors, whose fathers, grandfathers were lawyers.
Yeah.
That feeling of this is just your chosen path. And they didn't even have to think about it. They didn't have to go around making connections. So it's really an extra layers and layers of a burden on you to kind of to stay the course.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. And it's something that you kind of, you assimilate, you learn how to do, it becomes natural.
Yeah.
Like learning how to kind of take advantage of the room. Like I found myself being really loud in the sense of I will easily go up to anybody and ask them questions and start talking and say, oh, really interesting, I'd love to have a coffee if you have any time. And I'm not afraid to do that. And sometimes people, one time I was at work and I was talking to a man that he looked a bit lost in the lunchroom, and I invited him over and I said, oh, are you new here too? Turns out he was the COO of the company.
The chief operations officer, no
literally.
Less.
Literally.
Networking done there.
Exactly.
The new boy in school.
He was so lovely. And I sat down and I just had lunch with him, talking to him casually. And I remember being on a call and the partners were like, how are you able to just start talking to him? Like, you felt comfortable enough. And I think it's just a skill that I had to learn.
Yeah.
It wasn't
a skill that probably, and you can come in on this as well, Agogo, is there also that, you know, loud black woman, you know, making their presence felt, can also be something that people judge you for, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is that something you've had to figure out and navigate? Because your personality is, you know, you're who you are, and you know,
definitely.
But is there times when you felt like, oh, I'm making too much of an impression, or people are judging me for this?
I'm not going to lie to you, Roisin. I'll walk into a room just eating my lunch and people will be staring. So, like, it'll be a situation that people are going to notice me, see me. And if they have that impression, that's their own. Like, I can't do anything to change anybody's impression. I can only do me. And I will do whatever I need to do to get where I need to be.
I love your confidence. And I'm presuming, you know, that confidence came from how you were brought up as well, because it doesn't, as we say in Ireland, don't we, you don't lick it off the stones.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from somewhere. Agogo, what about you? Are you conscious of that stereotype and that perception of black
100%.
Women?
100%. And I think it's something that is important to consider whenever you are trying to stand up for yourself or when you're trying to make a point, because the thing about stereotypes is you can't change the fact that people have them. People have, you know, biases and prejudices, and you can't change that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be wise and working around it. So although it's unfortunate, like if that means that if I'm in a conversation and something is said that upsets me, I have to sit for a second, calm myself down, remind myself of the environment I'm in, and proceed accordingly,
yes.
You know? And that can be difficult at times because, you know, somebody else in a similar situation might not be perceived in a different, like in the same way if they had a certain type of reaction. Like they could be seen as upset versus me being seen as an angry black woman or something. And it is unfortunate that those things exist, but I feel like at all stages of society, there are stereotypes that will work against you if you are not careful with them, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah. I think it's so sad because there are people, like, I wouldn't consider myself generally a very loud person. I think I'm quite a quiet, introverted person. But there are people who are naturally loud. Just
yeah. Just well, I'm one of them, and Amy's definitely one of them.
Exactly. And like, I think it's unfortunate that like certain people like that will feel like you have to dim yourself or something if you don't have that sense of self-security and that sense of assuredness in yourself. And I think for me, because maybe not in the loud stereotype, but in other stereotypes, I've kind of learned that if you know who you are and if you are sure in who you are, it doesn't matter what people think of you.
Such a good point.
Do you know? Because if not, you're going to constantly be dimming yourself. You're going to constantly be upset. One thing I always keep in mind, something I've heard from one of these like faith preachers that I listen to, it doesn't matter who doesn't like you. What matters is who does, you know? So if people are forming stereotypes and they're saying all sorts, if those people cannot benefit you in a tangible way, why even care? Do you know what I mean? Like, what matters is, and I'm hoping that the people that you care about liking you are the people who are respectable, the people who are kind, the people who don't limit people to stereotypes in the first place. I always kind of think in that sense of, it doesn't matter if these people think I'm this or that, because you can't do anything for me anyways. And even if you could, I'll find somebody else who can, who will not limit me to a certain stereotype or box.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Talk to me about imposter syndrome. Is it something that you've experienced? And if so, how have you dealt with it? Because I think whatever ethnicity or everyone listening to this podcast will know what I mean by that. And perhaps it's something even more that you've had to deal with. So tell me about that, Innie.
Imposter syndrome is, and I didn't even know the name of the feeling until I spoke to other people and I did a bit of research into it. I have this little nagging voice in the back of me that, you don't belong here, you tricked people, you know, you did. People are saying that you worked hard, you didn't. I have this voice saying that, like, you're going to lose it, they're going to realize you're a fraud. This kind of, like, I'm a fraud is in my head. And even on how to navigate around that, it is a work in progress, because, you know, you're walking into a room and the majority of the time you're the only person of color in the room. So that's definitely a point, you know, especially when you kind of stick out like a sore thumb. And sometimes you forget. I forget that when I'm walking about doing my everyday, I do forget that I'm the only like black person in the room or the building sometimes, you know.
Or the building.
Honestly. Oh, like sometimes I remember one time I was doing some work in the office, click-clack at the laptop, and I felt eyes on me, and I turned around and someone was just staring, just stood staring. And I'm just wondering why. And then, you know, it's this kind of, it goes back to that feeling like, you know, you did trick everyone, you did cheat, you know, you didn't do your exams properly, like blah, blah, all this sort of stuff. And it's like, if I was anybody else, I wouldn't be feeling like this. I'd be if I was a white man, I would be so confident and walking around like, I earned this, nobody can tell me anything. And sometimes I need to remind myself that it's a constant reminder that you worked hard, you deserved this, you did what you had to do. But it's like, you have to constantly remind yourself that. And it is tough, and it is something that you forget, and it does have effects on your everyday. But at the same time, I think it is getting lesser and lesser, but you have to be aware of it and you have to make a conscious effort to tell yourself that
that you do deserve. You deserve everything. I mean, is it something you've had a Google?
Yes, and it's something I continually have.
So, a work in progress,
yeah, because I haven't overcame it completely yet. I feel like maybe because I have quite a peculiar journey to medicine as well. So I started pursuing medicine when I was 15 and I was 22 when I finally got in. So I did 6 medical admission exams in the process. I did the HPAT twice. I did the GAMSAT 2 times. And then I did the UKCAT and the BMAT, which are both UK exams.
Can I ask you why that it was such a long and winding kind of process?
I think, first of all, because this is the thing with imposter syndrome. Initially, I was thinking, is it just that I'm not smart enough? Am I not intelligent enough? Like, what's the issue here? But then it goes back to this whole thing we were speaking about earlier, lack of background, lack of resources. For example, 3 of the exams I did, when I did the UKCAT, the BMAT and the HPAT, I did them in the space of like 7 months. 3 major exams that most people would only choose 1 to do. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't know because I was like 16 at the time. I didn't know that you shouldn't do 3 major exams.
Yeah.
And bear in mind, like the hardest exam I had done prior to these was my junior cert. So I wasn't prepared. Like I remember for the BMAT exam, which you need if you're trying to apply for like Oxbridge and certain universities in the UK, I had to teach myself physics from scratch because I wasn't doing physics in school. And it's like putting that amount of pressure on yourself. Of course, you're not going to do well in those exams, as in you don't have the resources. You don't have time on your side. You're spreading yourself out too thin. So that was the first thing for me that made me realize, OK, resources make a difference. You know what I mean? Having advice, having guidance makes a huge, huge difference in preparing yourself. And I didn't have that preparation. When it came to the HPAT, so I did the HPAT a second time when I was in my first year of college. I'm not sure the exact reason I didn't do well in that. I think I was trying to get used to college life, you know, like first year of college. Because as of that time, like all of my teachers told me in school, the Leaving Cert is the hardest exam you'll ever do.
Wrong.
Wrong. Wrong. Especially when you're in medicine, it is not the hardest exam.
Yeah.
So I remember like I started off doing biomedical health and life sciences at UCD. And I was trying to get the grasp of that course. Then I was doing my HPAT again. Yeah. So, of course, I'm not going to do well in it because you don't have time to settle in and accept things and learn how to, you know, get on your feet. And it was a lot because I was 17 when I got into college. And then going on to when I did my GAMSAT exam. So those were closer to the end of my undergrad degree. I did my first one in final year. That one I know I didn't do well in because I just didn't give myself enough time to prepare. Mm-hmm. But the very last one I did, I decided to go all out, you know, push myself and really say, OK, I'm going to do the best that I possibly can. And thank God I actually got the points to get in that time that I fully applied myself, had the wisdom that I lacked at 16 and was able to do the thing that I wanted, you know. But I suppose where the imposter syndrome kind of came into that is I remember on my first day of medicine of grad med, I was in a conversation with a few girls in my class and they were like, how many times did you guys, or they were like, did you guys know you always wanted medicine? And I was like, yeah, I've always wanted it. Like, you know, I've done a few exams. I didn't even mention how many. And some of the people I was speaking to, they were like, oh yeah, I just kind of decided like a year ago. And I told myself that if the exam doesn't work out the first time, then I'll find something else. And I remember being in shock in that moment that, wait a second, not everybody has to, you know, go through such a strenuous journey. And that's where the imposter syndrome really sunk in, because I started comparing myself like, wait, so people can just be naturally, you know, talented, naturally smart. And I wasn't considering the background these people
and all the things that they had.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the fact that most of the people I was speaking to, they had doctors as parents. I didn't know that until a few weeks into medicine, where I noticed a pattern of I'd speak to people and they'd be like, my dad's a cardiologist, my mom's a pediatrician. And I was like, oh my gosh, is this a thing? And it's such a big thing. So I really had to battle with this thing of, You being good enough is not based on your past failures, because your failures don't define you.
That's,
you know what
such
I mean?
Such a good point. Well, I want to read you out a few things, if that's okay, from a study last year in October by the Munster Technological University. It's called The Black Ceiling. I don't know if you know about this, but it revealed experiences of women of colour working in rural Munster. And I'm just going to read out some of the findings and I'd love to get your response to them. So the study found that despite being highly qualified in a wide range of areas, having received primary and postgraduate qualifications, qualifications, all of the women faced significant difficulty in securing employment. The study found that promotional opportunities are more likely to go to white men and women, even where women of colour have higher qualifications and more experience. A strong recurring theme in the study noted by all participants was the difficulty in getting a job or getting their foot in the door, with the study noting that the women face a double bind as gender and race both negatively impact their employment experiences. Due to the lack of women of colour in organisations in rural Ireland, the participants expressed the difficulty in being a token black woman, which led to isolation by colleagues as well as loss of privacy, which is interesting, facing higher expectations than Irish colleagues. The participants reported having to outwork or outperform them in an effort to avoid further racial bias. Now, some of this might be surprising to some of our white listeners, but I imagine to you guys that some of it we've talked about already, but is that kind of depressingly sort of familiar?
Yes, definitely. I wouldn't be surprised to hear any of that. Usually when I used to apply to jobs, like before I got into medical school, I wouldn't get responses when I would put my name down as Agogo. So I would change it to Sophie.
And then you'd get responses.
And then I would get responses. I would literally get interviews when I would change my name as putting the more palatable name as my first name. That's when they would call me in. Or else sometimes when I would have it as Agogo Sophie O'Para, when they would call me up, they'd be like, "Hi, Sophie." I'm like, why are you ignoring my first name? Mm-hmm. Like if somebody's name was Anne-Marie, you wouldn't say, "Hi, Marie." Mm-hmm. Like you would give them a sense of dignity, you know? And I found like that was an experience. It wasn't an isolated one. Like a lot of people around me who are also black would have to do that when they're applying to jobs. And I think even that thing that the study mentioned about them having higher expectation by employers, that goes back down to this whole, you must prove yourself. You must prove you're worthy. Like if we're letting you exist in our space, you have to prove yourself. And I just think it's kind of wrong to put that expectation on people, like, because the only reason realistically that you're putting that on them is because they are of a different skin color, which is ridiculous. Because say, for example, because I think some people think that, oh, no, you know, if somebody's moved to a country, then of course there's going to be a bit of an expectation that you will work a bit hard. But say, for example, it was an American man, white man who comes, that they're not going to put that type of expectation because they're going to expect that he's already okay.
Yeah.
They don't need him to prove himself based on their prejudice and their perception of him as a person. And this is why I think it's so important that we address our bias, our unconscious bias, and realize that, like, sometimes without even realizing it, we can really limit people based on, you know, stories we've heard. There's this Nigerian author, I love, her name is Chimamanda, you know her?
Oh, yes.
Adichie. And she makes amazing, amazing books, and she's such a great speaker. And one of the things I've heard her say before is this danger of a singular story, this danger of when all you've ever heard, say, for example, you've never met a Mexican and you read a news article about a Mexican and there's negative connotations. And now you assume every Mexican is like that because of this one story you've read. And that's why I think that there's a danger in when we only limit people to one story. Like imagine, for example, Ireland has gone through so much in the past, things like the famine and other things that have taken place. Imagine all over the globe, people only tie us down to that. And so when an Irish person comes into a room and they're high achieving and they have a bit of wealth and they're doing well for themselves, everybody is surprised and is like, no, you still have to prove yourself because of this thing that happened years and years and years ago. It's not fair. And I think that's why it's so important that we sit back and really think about how am I perceiving others and where is that based from?
Yeah, that's so beautifully articulated, Agogo. Really amazing. Both of your overarching message today, I think, is really about encouraging other young women who might be dreaming of a career that perhaps they've been told isn't in their reach, that they've been limited. So what is your advice, both of you, to people who might be feeling that? Because you've obviously managed to push through it. As we've discussed at length, you shouldn't have had to push through that. That should be just something as available to you as anybody else. But unfortunately, you had to, and thankfully you did. But for other women maybe listening who feel that they're being limited, what would you advise them to do?
I think what I would say is, and it's something I've said before, if you don't see that person, become them, right? When it comes to representation, sometimes you only get hope when you see somebody else has overcome a certain battle. sometimes you need to become that person for somebody else. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I told myself growing up. It's not that these people didn't exist, but I didn't have people in my sphere. I wasn't well connected, so I didn't have people who were Black in medicine. I didn't have anybody to look up to. I barely believed that it was possible. But I resolved within myself that if I don't see it, I'm going to become it. And I can't let the fact that, you know, all of these limitations, all of these challenges in society have to hold me back. Like, I have to rise above it. And I think, first of all, what I would advise to such a person or to these women is to cut yourself some slack, first of all. Give yourself grace. This whole thing of having to work extra hard, sometimes just breathe, sometimes just rest, and realize that the opportunities that you are deserving of will come to you. They will come to you. Your hard work will not be in vain. And so you have to keep pushing, even when there is resistance, even when there's people who are commenting things that are unfair, even when you're in rooms and you feel like everybody is looking at you like you shouldn't be there. You have to push past and remind yourself that you have what it takes to exist in these spaces. You deserve to be there. It's almost like completely, constantly reassuring yourself and speaking to yourself and giving yourself these affirmations like, no, I am a worthy human being. I am a smart lady. I am intelligent. I am bright. I have something to offer to the world, and I'm going to do something with that. I'm going to use something with that. I think it's so important that you work on your own self-image, you know, work on building that sense of self-worth, because once you build that sense of self-worth, once you like yourself and really believe that you're deserving of things, the world is your oyster. Like, you're able to do whatever you want, you know, and I think I've adopted that mindset myself. I really, really struggled with self-image growing up, not just to do with race, but a whole plethora of different things. And it got to a point, not even that long ago, very recently, where I realized that, no, you are far more deserving. You are far greater than what you've always said that you are. And you need to start acting on that, you know, like, use the power you have to do good.
Any?
Honestly, very, very similar to Agogo. I would say literally feel the fear and do it anyways. Yeah. Something that I always keep in mind is nothing grows inside the comfort zone. If you feel that twinge of, ooh, should I be doing this? Yes, you very much should be doing this, and you should do it louder and bigger. That is what I would say. I think you need to work very much on your self-speak and what you tell yourself, because exactly as Agogo says, once you learn to actually believe, love, like, be with yourself, it really doesn't matter what anybody else has to say. Someone says, oh, you look very confident. I am confident. I am. Thank you. I actually take that as a compliment. You need to be confident. Mm-hmm. It takes you so far. I think sometimes charisma, confidence, being able to tell a joke, it takes you so far. I think I lean a lot on my personality and being able to, yes, exactly. If you don't see someone where you want to be, you can be that person, or you could find someone similar and just really go with it. You can forge the path for yourself, and you'll be helping not only yourself but other people. And I just feel like you should definitely just go for it. Nothing is stopping you. No one is stopping you. They might try, but you need to ignore it and keep going for it, and you'll get there. You really will.
On a practical level, what changes would you both like to see in the medicine and law industries that would encourage more people from diverse backgrounds to get involved?
One of the things I would say as pertains to graduate medicine is currently there's a barrier for people of lower socioeconomic background to get it in. So there used to be a loan. They called it the Grad Med Loan. Bank of Ireland issued it. And it was basically a loan that lets you pay for the entire tuition and you pay for it all afterwards. So once you start working. And they took away that loan 2 years ago. And I think the big issue is that it creates a more elitist mindset around medicine, where people who really want it and they've worked hard and they've made up their minds, now they don't have the financial means. And I think that's a big issue that needs to be addressed, because there are so many people, like I said, I have quite a platform that I've built based on my story. And so many people DM me on a daily basis like, is there any financial aid? Because I really want this, but my parents can't afford it. And I don't have the means by myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, not everybody is lucky enough or privileged enough to study something that will get them a very well-paying job. And so for certain people, they might have to wait 10 years before they're able to enter medicine for that reason. And within that time, they could have a family now. There could be other things that take place. There could be health issues. There's different challenges that suddenly arise. And now it's discouraging a person from pursuing a dream that they had the fire for 10 years prior because of they didn't have the means. And I think that's something that the government really needs to address and work on. Like, I think scholarships even should be created for people to encourage people. Like, I was a recipient of the All-Ireland Scholarship in my undergrad, Biomedical Health and Life Sciences. And I know how that changed my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't have to worry about working during the semester. I could dedicate my all to my academics. And thank God I was able to graduate with a first because of it. But I had friends.
Congratulations, by the way.
But I had friends who had to work tirelessly and who had to do the absolute most just to get by in college. And I just think that I know even with scholarships, there's always competition for it, like regardless of what your background is. But if the opportunity was there, at least people could try. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a big change I would like to see. And even when it comes to medical education as well, because I'm very passionate about this, I think it's so important that within medical education, that Black healthcare is also emphasized. And by that, I mean, for example, certain infections will show up differently on Black skin to white skin or lighter colored skin. Certain diseases will show up in a very different way. I have a friend and she said her cousin had a skin issue for the longest time. She kept going to different GPs, trying to figure out what's the issue. And it took them a year before they were able to say, you have psoriasis. Mm. No, psoriasis is not that crazy a thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it should be something that can be spotted. But because they're not trained or educated on what this looks like on a darker skin color, I just think as Ireland becomes a more multicultural society, these things, because I understand why they might not have been emphasized in previous medical education, but we have to adapt.
There's no excuse anymore.
There's no excuse.
Absolutely. They're all really good points. What about you, Innie, in law?
I think also, yes, as well as socioeconomic access, I think financial aid is definitely a huge thing. I know on the route to being a barrister, it's very expensive and they do have scholarships available. But I saw recently that I think it's the Denham scholarship. There's only allocations for two people out of the entire country that's applying. So definitely increases there. As well as I know myself, I was a recipient of the HEAR scheme, access scholarship going to university, which was so helpful financially because, like Agoga, I didn't have to work. So I was able to do all the networking things, all of the extracurriculars that helped me be where I am today. But something about that is that when I was in secondary school, it wasn't made aware to me. So like even the fact that we have these scholarships in place, but people don't know about it. People don't know and they're not able to get access to it. So I think being louder and really promoting it a lot more will be so beneficial to students and potential law students as well. And also I think with the firms, I know that a few firms are trying, but I think that a lot of direction is needed in terms of offering services and offering not counselling, but advice in terms of CVs and clinics and other networking opportunities to people in college to help them access firms and companies as such. Mm-hmm. And as well, I know in the UK, because it's so rich in culture over in the UK, and I think in Ireland, we're becoming and we're growing into it and it has really changed, but they have spaces dedicated to people of colour in terms of growing professionally and in terms of learning those really critical professional skills that will be so beneficial to people in their postgrad, undergrad, whichever it is. So I feel like we need to dedicate more spaces to people from ethnic backgrounds to really learn and develop and grow, and it will be really beneficial just all
for
around.
Everybody. Yeah,
for
it's
everybody.
Just, it's always better, and the studies and the science all show that.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things before you go. I'm just curious as to this right wing growing movement in Ireland and everywhere. In fairness, this Ireland is full rhetoric, these terrible things, the Dublin riots. I just wondered how it has affected you both personally, and you're based in Dublin, so Gogo, I'll start with you.
Oh gosh, that night was very scary for me. I remember I had an appointment the next day. I cancelled it because I didn't feel safe leaving my house. I think for me, what was scary about it was the amount of people that showed up to those riots. Because of course, you're always aware that there are people with extreme right-wing ideologies, but you don't realize there's so many of them. Do you know what I mean? As in, like, I'm used to being a person on social media, I get a lot of comments and a lot of bot accounts, a lot of accounts of faceless people saying strange things like, get out of our country, you don't deserve to be here. So I was aware it existed until those riots happened. And of course, I completely sympathize with the family and with the children affected and with the school, because it was such a tragic incident. And I think that should be completely acknowledged in itself. However, I was completely frightened by the response that came from that, because just like we were talking about, it really came down to this, you have to prove yourself. And even if you have proven yourself, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. It's never enough. And I remember in that moment, going back like to that blog post I wrote a few years ago, it just reminded me of this whole thing of, do I even belong here? I've spent 21 out of my 24 years here in this country, and yet still, it's never enough. Like, nothing I can do is ever enough. And I remember hearing very scary voice notes that were circulating on social media. And my fear at the time was, so this means I could be on a bus sitting beside a person who has harmful intentions towards me just because I'm an immigrant. And that is terrifying. Do you know what I mean? And I really, it was beautiful to see the solidarity that showed up from that, and that people who were like, no, we're not all like this. And I think it's so important that people show solidarity in moments like that. However, it was extremely scary. Do you know what I mean? Like, living in a place and you think you're safe, because Ireland is generally a very safe country, extremely. So to see that there are people out there with intentions, like, I have a friend, her brother was out that day and he got stabbed, and he was just walking home from the gym. He was just walking home from the gym. He hears footsteps behind him, and now there's a mob of like 30 men chasing after him, and he is terrified. And I was absolutely shocked when she told me, like, she was like, he didn't know what to do. He was literally going to the guards, like, please let me hide behind you. And of course, the guards didn't even, like, it was a very scary situation for everyone that day. So it was hard to even navigate it. And I'm just imagining, like, imagine that stab was fatal. Yeah. Imagine he passed away from the incident that happened that day. And I just think as a country, we need to do better to address these issues, these social issues. Of course, like, the issue of the initial problem that happened should never have taken place. And that's something that should be addressed. However, it shouldn't be pinned to the fact that somebody is from a different country, because it could have been anyone.
Any brief comments on that? Because I think Agogo has really summed it all up.
Honestly, like, it's something that has been brewing, especially on social media, for so many years. I think the riots was just a culmination of all of that, and it definitely, I don't think it was a shock that it happened, because it's been there, it's been very apparent. And I know myself, I was in the riots, I was out that night, I didn't know what was going on, I was not on my phone. And I remember my white friends calling my phone, saying, "You need to get out of there, like, what are you doing?" And I was just like, "Oh, what's going on?" No, but it was really, really, really scary. And again, just be going about your everyday life and to think that someone has ill intent, it's just a bit shocking. I don't really know what to say in terms of it, because I don't think about it. I really don't think about it. It's not something that's in my mind. I'm going about living my life, and I just hope that everybody can be safe as they do so. But I think that the government really needs to tackle down and not disregard this. This is a very, very prominent issue, and it's only going to get worse if they don't buckle down. And I think it was just the riots was something that was on a whole global scale, because this was very popularized, and it's not something that Ireland should be put in that light for, because as you said, generally it is quite nice. So I don't know why this would happen, and it would just completely blow up the country for the wrong reasons.
Well, in happier news, tell me about your ambitions, both of you, because you strike me both as very ambitious people and you are striving along in both your disciplines, medicine and law. What does it look like, sort of, this is a very interview question, 5 years' time, what would you like to end up doing at Gogo?
Have a lot of ambitions for the future. A lot of them are based around impact in education. I'm very passionate about children. So to answer that, I want to be a pediatrician. Now, I say that now. By the time I do my placements, I might change my mind, but I love children so, so, so much. And I'm so committed to them because I see them as the future. Do you know what I mean? And they're so innocent and precious. So in terms of medicine, by the grace of God, I would like to be a pediatrician one day. Now, coming into education, I would love to see empowerment of children from disadvantaged backgrounds, just so they know it's possible. And I'm actually not even just limiting this to Black children. children from disadvantaged backgrounds as a whole. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? People who don't have parents who are wealthy, people who don't have connections. I want them to know what's possible. So I would honestly love to like start a nonprofit one day or a social enterprise that really focuses on empowering these kids. You know, I've done some talks in schools before where I've spoken to children and I've told them a bit about my story and the responses are so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like I remember I went to this Desh school in Dublin 7 last year and I gave a talk and the questions that they were asking, like, oh, what's college like? Mm-hmm. Oh, if I want to study this, what should I take in my leaving cert? Mm-hmm. And these were actual children, you know, like primary school kids. And it touched my heart so much because kids believe in the impossible. Mm-hmm. It's the disillusionment of life that makes them start limiting their thoughts. So it's like, if we can get in the way of that disillusionment before it happens and let them know that, okay, even if you don't have the resources now, things can change. Anything can happen. That's what I'm passionate about. So I'm hoping in future to make an impact in education. I would love to even like, this is a long-term hope, probably not 5 years, but like even like create a scholarship fund that empowers these kids to, you know, to dream big and to work hard to get where they want. So those are kind of a few.
That's pretty cool. I'm impressed. So what about you, Innie, in the field of law? Are we looking at barrister? Are we looking at...
Well, I'm on the path to qualifying as a solicitor. So honestly, I was asked that question a while ago. What's your plans for 5 years? And it's so funny because I genuinely haven't a clue. But I do know that the sky is my limit. And I see myself, honestly, when it comes to change, because I feel like change is just so needed and someone needs to be pushing the boat on it. So I know that change starts from the top. And I know that I will get to the top to enact it. So be it partner, be it politician, be it the next president, whichever it is. You know, you can check, maybe not 5 years, maybe 10, maybe 15. Yeah. We'll see. And I just definitely want to be, you know, one of my friends is very, like, she's just so confident. I love her so much. And she says, she has her own talk show. And she says, you know, I could be the next Oprah. I don't care. I'm going to pioneer it. I was just like, yes, you will. And I'll be on your show in a couple of years as well. So, you know, if I need to be one of the first few black female partners at a top corporate law firm, then yes, so be it. And I think I'm really excited for the future. I'm also excited for the future of Ireland. I think it's really changing and also for the positive. I know that we have the negatives, but in a whole, it's really great. It's so nice to be welcomed. It's so nice to have people wanting to do change as well. So it's really exciting to think about the future and the unlimited possibilities. So
I think you're limitless is what limitless. You both are. And I've been so enjoyed talking to you. And I hope that you can come back on. And I think what this has been a sort of a piece about, you know, being black and Irish and breaking barriers and all. But when we do stuff about health or when we do stuff about law in the future, like Innie, you've been on talking about gender-based violence before with us. So I think that's really key that, you know, people of colour aren't just on talking about being people of colour. Yes. You know, that you're talking about your
experts. We were literally talking about that before we came in.
Oh, good. Well, I'm on that board as well. I know that's what we have been talking about. But I mean, in the future now, we've made that connection. Yes. And so when there is a health issue or indeed a paediatric issue that, you know, you might have an interest in or in law, as we've had you on before, I think that's the key point.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. It's been a pleasure to be here and even to hear from the different perspectives that you both have. Like, I think it's so great to literally, because I don't even see this as a question, like as a platform to just speak about being black and Irish. Because I was saying to Innie before we came in here that I think for a long time, especially 2020, George Floyd, Black Lives Matter situation, a lot of conversations that, you know, had black people involved was just about racism.
I know. Yeah. And we did it here as well. So I understand.
And it's just,
it needs to broaden out.
Exactly.
From
and I think it's good that everybody is learning from mistakes, you know, because we're human, we're going to make mistakes and we learn from them and we develop. So like, I would be more than happy to talk about health issues.
You will be back on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you both, Agogo
so
and Innie.
Oh, it's been so great. Thank you, Roisin.
Thank you.
That was Agogo, Apara and Innie Ekiolu. They're brilliant women. We'll definitely be talking to again on this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and the podcast, please leave us a review or subscribe as it really makes a difference. The podcast is produced by Suzanne Brennan and by me, Roisin Ingle, with JJ Vernon on sound. Talk to us on social at IT Women's Podcast or email us thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com. That's it for me. Mind yourselves and I will talk to you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.